You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast, your complete source of information, news, and analysis of your awesome town crew.
Open wide for some soccer!
You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to then?
We passed then.
When?
Just now. We're at now now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
Now.
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When?
Just now.
When will then be now?
Soon.
This club, and any sports franchise for that matter, should be a sacred community asset. That is how we're going to treat the crew. Our goal will be to take the crew to be one of the standard bearers in the league.
And look at the lower deck there. The crew faithful, ever so loud. Yeah, buddy!
It is the Massive Report post rainpocalypse. Cementpocalypse, New England edition, I guess is what we're going to call it.
Cementpocalypse.
Cementpocalypse. My name is Matt Goschert. Nate Beckman, Greg Benson, Justin Bell, Morgan Hughes, all joining me. Sam Fahmy is turning the gears and making sure that all of the stuff that you hear tonight sounds somewhat like a professional radio program. as much as he can. Jonathan Tannenwald of Philly.com going to join us in the fourth segment and talk to us a little bit about the Philadelphia Union in the home-and-home series that we have budded by one game in the middle with that team starting next week. So we'll be talking about all of that.
It's a Red Bull Philly steak.
It really is. It really is.
It is. It's a sandwich.
It's a Philly steak that somebody poured Red Bull all
somebody
over.
Which actually sounds disgusting now that you...
It really does not sound tasty at all.
You just mentioned two MLS teams. And just thought I'd point that out.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Steak?
Red Bulls.
Rebels. Phillies.
Steak
yeah.
FC.
Steak FC. So we're back with another edition of the show. The crew drop a very important match in Foxborough on a rainy night on turf. Why do we always play them away on turf towards the end of the season?
I don't know. Those lines were driving me bonkers.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, I thought I would get over it and not be gripey and crew cranky for another, 85 minutes after the first five. But it really didn't get better.
Yeah.
My buddy Greg, Coach Berhalter mentioned in today's...
Apparently I'm not your buddy anymore.
Not this Greg. Well, did you make a quote
about the field?
Field. Well, he said that the lines messed him up. Like, lines messed the team up.
It made them play narrower
than
normally would.
Well, yeah.
Head games.
I did say that NFL Mark Fields for hosting MLS games when MLS is trying to legitimize itself as a major sports league in this country is as bush league as it gets.
Well, it's embarrassing.
It really is.
It's super embarrassing.
I understand that you've got the Crafts own both teams, and so they're going to play in their stadium. But
it's not like the Patriots had a game at noon the next day. That's my biggest thing. The Patriots had the night game last night. The Patriots, there was plenty of time to stripe that field after the fact, and there was just nothing done. And nothing done at all on it as far as that. It was kind of the same excuses that we got a couple of years ago for that playoff match with Seattle, and I don't remember who they were playing. Maybe it was Salt Lake or something along those lines. But where there wasn't even a Seahawks match for like a couple of days, and they had the weird scrubbed out logos in the center and all that sort of stuff. But I've been to games before where you've got the football lines on the stadium, and I'm sitting at a wedding in Tennessee watching the game on my phone, and I've got guys who've never watched Major League Soccer coming up to me and just looking at it and just chuckling. Because it's just one of those things that makes the league look...
It's comical.
Yeah, it makes...
And not in a good way.
Yeah. So I guess really, you know, the crew do fight to get one back before the half. Go back in the second half, and there's a... the play with Jermaine Jones scoring the goal. questionably, was he onside, was he not? I've seen a couple of different angles. I'm still not 100% sure.
I don't think he was, but really, the crew had a ton of opportunities. It was a game of, you know, kind of the story. One of the storylines, I think, is missed opportunities in that one. But I liked watching this game. It was exciting for, like, the first 60, 70 minutes. I thought the crew played really well under those conditions. And with a different type of field, different type of play that you get when you're on a fast carpet versus, you know, a regular field. And then they just kind of went crazy, especially people in the defense. Steve Clark was running out of that place like a crazy person.
Steve Clark is not Manuel Neuer.
It was kind of wild. And, you know, once I can see doing that, I love his confidence. But, I mean, that's the kind of weird stuff I did when I played club ball in the last few years. Not even like when I was decent. I get scored on. But I would surprise, you know, we didn't have to pay a deeper price for that one. And then, of course, you got Waylon Francis, who kind of gets in the face of someone doing a throw-in to try to compensate for that. And it was just an odd string of events. And now he's out, too, next week.
What do you think on that, Justin? What do you think about the match?
Well, I mean, you know, you said at the beginning is the field turf or the turf. I think that's the difference in that game. I mean, from the very beginning, it just seemed like the crew's footing was not confident. I mean, the one player who again showed well for the Columbus Crew was Tony Chani.
Yeah,
You could not find a fault in anything that he did in that game. He was injured at one point, or at least banged up a little bit, and he fought through it. I thought he was going to come out. It looked like he was going to come out. He didn't. He stayed in there.
His assist was great.
Yeah, it was.
He was just playing so well, just so well, even on that crappy surface. And I wish... Look, you can't really hang it on anybody. I think Waylon Francis was really poor in every regard in that game. His first yellow card didn't need to happen. His second yellow card didn't need to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He put his team in a real bad spot in that game. He put his team in a real bad spot for the next game. Mm-hmm. Who knows if we're going to see him again this season? I mean, that was really tough. And it's, you know, I know sometimes players get a rush of blood to the head, but I don't even know what that was. That was just almost inexplicable. But the offside call, again, I think it was arguable. I mean, there was a lot of, it seemed immediate, you know, you want to blame somebody for that. Look, the four defenders of the Columbus Crew needed to do a much better job on that play. That's what it comes down to. Forget about the AR. Forget about the referee. Forget about was there a touch or not. You can't let that many guys get behind you in that circumstance. But, again, you're playing on turf, and you just don't feel right. You can see it when the Columbus Crew go to play on that surface anywhere. They just don't feel right. And it is an abomination that surface exists anywhere in our league.
Yeah.
I said it last year on the podcast. I said it before that. Since the biggest home field advantage in this league is Seattle.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with the amount of fans that they have in that stadium. It has everything to do with that surface.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine this. They are going to play the last game of the season for the Supporters Shield on that surface, one of the last games of the season on that surface. And if they make the playoffs and win out, they will play MLS Cup on that surface. Forget about the lines on the field.
Yeah.
That doesn't really bother me. It bothers me that you can't see the touch line or the goal line. That's one thing.
Yeah.
But what really bothers me is that there are competitive games that mean something in the results of this league that are played on a surface that is absolutely cruel. It's a cruelty that we make professional athletes play on that field. And it's good that the women in the World Cup are suing. Hopefully they get that changed. And I hope that the Players Union of MLS, I mentioned it in a tweet this weekend, make this a thing in the CBA.
It has to be addressed.
They have to do it because it's just flat out wrong.
Yeah. It has to be addressed. That's one of the things. And you look at, you know, other sports, especially, you know, we try to draw some comparisons, but even the NFL that we're complaining about their lines. But it's not like you have, at least from what I've seen, competitive games played with the infield cut out of those stadia, right. Those mm-hmm. stadiums. You have some of the preseason games where there's dirt on a portion of the field and there's grass on another portion of the field. But at the same time, when the actual regular season starts, that's done over. And it's just, you know, you can't monkey with the surface that much.
Well, there's a key difference in soccer versus football. Like I, of a course. Lot of people, mm-hmm. there's the football. NFL has professional athletes just like we do.
Yeah,
and I don't feel like it's the safest surface. Maybe it's becoming safer. Certainly, when I played, you know, indoor, 10, 15, 20 years ago, knees were ripped up, skin would get ripped off constantly. Maybe it's better now. You could make it bouncy, whatever. The thing is, the key to soccer is that the ball is on the ground a lot yep. of the mm-hmm. time. It interacts with that surface constantly. Mm-hmm. That is how the game moves.
Yeah, exactly.
When the ball bounces, you talked about a moon bounce, I think, last week on the podcast that we would expect to see up in New England. That materially changes the game
yeah.
constantly. It'd be like playing hockey on clay or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Where the puck is changed at every move of the
well, that's
game.
That's the whole comment. And just you brought up hockey, the whole question that a lot of people have with the Winter Classics that are going on, or now the Stadium Series, or the 50 outside right. games that they're playing.
It's a spectacle and nothing else.
It is, because you look at some of those. You know, there's been games where it's been snowing during it, mm-hmm. and that completely changes the whole aspect of the game. When you're dealing with snow. Versus when you're in an inside enclosed arena and you have a relatively well-maintained temperature ice surface, and it's the same thing with turf versus grass.
In that case,
in
though,
MLS.
I mean that is a spectacle.
Yeah,
I mean that's all that is, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, sure,
it does count.
Yeah, it counts. You know, yeah.
But it forms part of an 82 game season, 82 though,
yeah.
as opposed to 34. And is it? Yeah. It's 34 yeah. in MLS.
And the possibility that yeah. they're going to play this, like I said, they're going to play MLS Cup on this crap.
Yeah.
yeah.
But like, you know, getting past that, because it sounds. I mean, look, I'm not. I would not blame that loss on that kind of result or on that kind of surface. Because you know we played New England. On our surface,
yeah.
you know, before that, and also yeah. went on one by a goal.
Yeah.
So I mean, it bounces back and forth. I mean, there's a give and take there, but look, I mean, we definitely, I don't know, could have played better. Let's put yeah. it that way. And you know, I think we will. I think in the next couple of weeks, you know, everything is on the line, and so yeah. they'll put it out there.
To put a period on the whole conversation about the turf, you know, we talk about NFL stadiums that have got this. Not every NFL stadium has the artificial turf. I mean, yeah. there's a lot of stadiums like the Cardinals Stadium out in Phoenix. Yeah. They've got grass. Chicago Bears Stadium, Soldier Field, they've got grass. There's several others. And as you mentioned, Nate, they don't talk about it. Like, you don't hear pro football players talking about, oh, the grass versus turf. It's a non-issue.
Well, it's because the game
because yeah. the ball is almost never on the ground unless you're talking about the Cleveland Browns, who actually won on Sunday and my team didn't, so that joke really falls flat. But yeah, I think that's the only reason that this game on Saturday left such a bad taste in our mouth. It's because there were so many of these factors.
Yeah.
There was the turf. There was. Did the ball touch Suarez before Jermaine Jones gets to it? Does that put him offside? Does Davies take a dive to earn the yellow card for Waylon Francis, knowing that he's already on a yellow card?
Yeah.
All of these little things that aren't directly related to the play of the game.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason that rather than, hey, we went on the road to a team that we're battling for a playoff spot and lost, normally that's, hey, that's kind of to be expected.
And they're playing well, too. I mean,
they are. And they didn't play badly.
To me, just to get it on the record, because I have to be that guy, the Davies thing, while I don't agree that Waylon Francis should have run up on him because it was a dumb move, at the same time, Davies looked like somebody shot him from the upper deck. I mean, that's there's no way that the non-contact or the very, very little contact that was exerted earned that sort of hit or that sort of, we'll just call it a pro wrestling bump.
And if Davies stays on his feet, I don't think Francis gets a second yellow.
Yeah, and it's gamesmanship. I agree completely. Right. It's not necessarily sporting, but it's certainly gamesmanship, and it's certainly something that happens all the time.
Yeah. So.
And one thing to keep in mind, too, at the end of all of this, the Crew are still in fourth spot in the East.
True. Fifth?
Yeah.
I thought we were...
We got some help from L.A. Thump and Toronto as well, so, you know, all is not lost.
I thought we were still ahead of New York, but maybe we're down from them.
New York beat Houston, so I want to say they leapfrogged us.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's that.
Yeah. But still, I mean, we're
still in
good position.
Top five still go, so... Yeah.
Still in good position.
We're above the Mendoza line. No, 43 points. New York has 44. Sporting has 46.
Oh, yeah.
And then up from there. The nice thing is even, I mean, not nice, because Toronto does have a game in hand, and Toronto controls the season series with us. So that is, that's certainly a concerning thing when you look into that going on. By the way, if anybody
is... It's a little chaotic here, isn't it?
Well, if anybody's wondering about all the noises in the background, apparently the second coming of God is happening outside.
Well, yeah,
as far as rain goes,
the great flood.
Yeah, the great flood, and there's some water that's gotten into the bar. So,
well, the new Crew banner is also hanging off the side of the off of Hendox.
What you're saying is Hendox may take off like the insurance company in Monty Python, and start just sailing around the city of Columbus.
That's possible.
We
are on tour with the new Crew banner.
Good thing there's a lot of accountants in here.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Was accountants, not insurance guys.
The insurance buildings. That was Fight Club.
That was Fight Club.
Or was that, no? That was the credit card buildings.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway. Well, let's come back in a little bit here. We're going to talk a little playoff forecaster with Nate. Going to talk a little Crew rebrand, and Greg's going to yell at some people. That's all coming up in the next couple of segments. This, my friends, is the Massive Report. Back, segment two of the Massive Report. Retiring the construction workers.
Give the village people a good sign.
Exactly.
Oh, this is just the beginning.
Oh, it is. Just the beginning. lot of stuff to talk to and talk about in this second segment. The biggest thing that we're going to do, first of all, the crew obviously dropping some vital points in New England, still clinging on to that fifth spot, but Toronto on the door. Mr. Nate Beckman, he's the guy that breaks it all down for us, and we're going to do that right now in a segment we like to call...
It's time to prepare you and you for the future.
This is a forecast, so...
The forecast for the weekend, when you look at things in a whole, you know, the season is peaks and valleys.
Folks, I think it's time we look into the future.
All right, so last week, yeah, we lost, but it didn't go as poorly as it could have, and I actually had predicted kind of a worse outcome overall when you look at the results from around the league. So all is not lost. And really, I think we get 3 more points, definitely 6 more points. We're still in the playoffs. I'm still predicting that we make it. So let's get into it. The Eastern Conference standings, excuse me, you know, the crew are at 43 points in fifth. New York's above them in 44th, or with 44 points. And Sporting is still at 46 points. These are kind of the slots that I think Columbus can be looking at as far as where they might end up, third, fourth, or fifth. Toronto is really the team that's also going to potentially come up and give them a run. Toronto still has that game in hand. That game in hand is this week on Wednesday. They play Houston. At that point, all teams will be even, finally. Probably the first time since like March 8th, since the beginning of the season. And we'll all have 31 games in going into this coming weekend, and we'll be even throughout. It does feel like the schedule was a little more balanced this year. Remember, just thinking back to last year and looking at points per game a lot more last year. This year, it feels like they were a lot closer for a longer time into the run-up, the last 8-10 weeks of the season. So if you did that on purpose, MLS, good job. Do it again. Going into next week, I think the crew have a good shot at beating Philly. They're not really – the Union aren't on their strong foot anymore. They've scored 1 goal in the 2.5 weeks or so since the Open Cup game that they lost to Seattle. So that happens. Obviously, we'll be rooting for the crew. Other teams to root for this coming weekend, other than – so in the Houston game this Wednesday, you're going to want to root for Houston over Toronto. Chicago over KC on Friday night, Montreal over New England on Saturday, and that one's at 4 in the afternoon. Then at 7, the same time as the crew game, you've got New York and Toronto playing. That's another huge game.
That is huge.
In terms of what can happen there. Those are two teams that we want to kind of gain points on. Ultimately, Toronto is more of a threat, again, because they have that game in hand. Toronto loses this Wednesday. Maybe a tie is the best outcome, but if they win on Wednesday, we absolutely want New York to win this weekend. D.C. Houston, that game doesn't really have too much of an effect because I really don't give Houston much a shot at making the playoffs anymore.
Yeah.
Then as far as the best case, worst case, and what I think will happen, best case would have, you know, the crew holding on to their fifth place spot but being in a tie for fifth/fourth with Sporting. We've got worst case scenario puts the crew under the line in sixth with Toronto jumping both New York and Columbus. And then my guess, I do think the crew will end up again in fifth this weekend. And actually, none of the spots will change hands. Everyone will kind of stay where they're at going into the last couple games of the season. I do think the crew have a good shot at winning this weekend in Philly.
Yeah.
So that's what I got.
All right, thoughts around the table here. Let's talk about the crew's playoff chances. Obviously, Toronto's got a big match against Houston on – it was Wednesday, is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah, and that's going to kind of be, I guess, the bellwether for what's going on this weekend. Toronto right now winning the season series against the crew, which is kind of – which is friggin' weird.
Not only won it.
Yeah.
But, like, pretty much – owned it.
No, owned the crap out of it.
Like,
no.
Owned it in, like, the Nina West way of owning things.
But that's going to bring everybody back to current, I guess, more than anything else, back to the real time going into this weekend. What do you guys think as far as that goes? If Toronto, now Toronto's not had great form in the last couple of weeks, and Toronto drops that match to Houston, it opens things up a little bit as far as the games in hand, because you've got, at this point, the Crew 3 points ahead of anybody else in playoff contention. Toronto loses that match. That continues, but then everybody's kind of on even footing. So I know Nate kind of mapped out best case scenario. Where do you guys think? What do you think is gonna happen, Greg?
Well, first of all, I think that looking at where Houston are at facing Toronto on Wednesday, Houston, I think almost kind of know they're out of it.
Yeah.
Which is rare. We've talked about this before. It's rare that Houston are not in playoff contention, making a run at the end of the season as they kind of tend to do in recent years. But I think Houston can probably take the pressure off and kind of play spoiler here. They've got nothing to lose at this point. I mean, even if they're trying to get into the playoffs, they're going all guns ablaze, going for the win. I think Toronto's got a lot more to lose in this game, it's one of those trap games for them. Yes, it's at BMO. Yes, they're going to have the home fans behind them, but they're playing a team with nothing to lose. I think they got to watch out for them.
Does that really mean as much in Toronto as it did in the last few years?
That I'm not sure about.
Honestly,
what do you mean the home field
advantage?
I think it's still a factor. We look at Toronto going on the road to LA and getting beat 3-0. I don't think that result happens that way in Toronto. I mean, even if they lose that game, I don't think they get whipped as resoundingly as they did at StubHub, Home Depot, whatever the stadium's called now.
Yeah. Homestub Center.
The Homestub Center. That's,
yeah,
of
that's
course.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Stub Your Toe Place.
The Stub Your Toe Place.
If this was Serie A,
the result would already be a foregone conclusion.
Yes, it was, I would be saying that there is no way that Toronto FC is going to lose this game. but there's a possibility.
Yeah, there's a way.
I think they do lose this game, and I also think that they lose against New York on Saturday. I think they drop two the next two.
Yeah.
There is something very strange that's happening inside the mind of Michael Bradley this in the year 2014, and I would, if I could peep into the mind of any player in MLS, it would probably be Michael Bradley's mind, because he's got to be just kind of thinking to himself, what have I got myself into? Do I really want to be here? But he seems like he's kind of going through the motions of being the competitive leader, because I think he feels sort of responsible in some way.
For sure.
It's interesting. The one thing that I think is really interesting going into this weekend is that really other than Bill Hamid, there's nobody from the East that's been called up by the national team for this friendly.
Interesting.
It's Bill Hamid is the only player from the East. On the West, you have Romando, Gonzalez, Yedlin, Donovan and Gill.
And DC's spot is virtually assured, and really they almost have a lock on the number one spot.
And yeah, it's locked in. Yeah.
No one from Sporting Kansas City.
No one from Sporting Kansas City. It's
interesting.
I think that's a really interesting thing because you've got Seattle, LA, and Real, who are essentially darn close to untouchable as far as. Playoff spots go. So
actually, go ahead.
I was just thinking about something Greg said with respect to Toronto potentially having all the pressure in that midweek game on them. Greg Vanney actually, played a lighter team against LA in LA this past weekend. No holds barred. This game is not as important as our games against the Eastern Coast teams. Mm-hmm. We need to beat the East.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
So he said, right, because all games are worth 3 points, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But you're on the road against potentially the hottest team in the league.
If Greg Berhalter would have just said we're going to just play our reserves against the West this year, we'd be in Chicago's spot right now or worse.
Yeah.
I mean that's the whole thing. That's
we actually like. are undefeated against like the winning five playoff teams.
Yeah.
Undefeated against them. That's the reason why we're in the spot that we're in.
What I don't understand is the mentality of a coach who says any game is not worth as much as, you know, it's almost like you're like, well, we know we're not going to win, so let's just mail this one in.
Well, this is in the context of 3 games in 8 days.
Well, sure.
And he's like, okay, well,
I get that the other 2 games are very important.
I need to save my Jermaine Defoe's of the world for those 2 games, which they still have to play 2 in 4 days or 2 in 5 days.
I mean, what's to say if they don't throw a full-strength squad at the Galaxy and put 110% effort in, they don't come away with at least a point?
It's really interesting.
How do you look at a game and say this is unwinnable? What kind of coach does that?
But that's the way that it is. That's the way MLS is.
Coach?
Derby County?
Well, Mike, after the New York-Houston match this past weekend, Mike Petke actually said that. They asked him, New York won 1-0, 1-0. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember who was interviewing on Mike Petke on the field after the game. It was one of the NBC sports guys. And he said, you know, did you have any reservations about going for the win? And Mike Petke said, no, we're at home. We go for the win at home.
Yeah.
Like, the implication is that, yeah, if it was on the road, then maybe we would have gone for the 0-0 draw. But that's just kind of the way that things are. You manage expectations. You manage results. Mm-hmm. And I started, you know, just now as you were talking, Nate, I was thinking to myself that Toronto New York game on the weekend, I think that your good friend Tim Cahill has been
friend of the show, yeah,
has been suspended for that game. I don't think he'll be playing.
It doesn't matter. He's called up by Australia. Anyway.
Oh,
he will be suspended for the Crew game. Is actually the way that's going to play out.
Wow,
because you can't serve a suspension
and play
in an international weekend.
Yeah,
that's true.
This is so interesting.
Yeah, I know. He is called up for the game Australia versus UAE.
Friendly.
Yeah. Friendly as hell.
I think.
yes, thank you, Australia.
The UAE are always friendly opponents. They're I have no idea.
So that's something that happened last weekend. I didn't see the play. I think he went in as a sub, and he got a red card in the 88th minute.
Yeah.
It was a tricky tackle.
Really pointless.
And he's been upset all weekend because he's gotten a lot of heat for saying that I'm going to go play for Australia.
Yeah, there's really not a whole lot. Like, I'm looking through the entire list of players that are being called up. The only thing that's actually would impact us at all, Kevon George is called up this weekend. But it's really like it's the majority of it's the West.
Congratulations to Kevon, by the way.
Yeah, no, totally. That's great.
Good for him.
It's good for him. But it's the majority of it's the West or teams that are. Canada has a bunch of call-ups from Montreal and Toronto. Nothing from Vancouver, though, which is kind of interesting.
Who's called up from Montreal? Is it
Gagnon Lampierre and Nakahima Furan and Oyemet.
It would be nice if they still could beat England. New England. Not England. Or England. I don't care.
Or
England.
England.
I'd be really impressed if Montreal beat England, but...
England, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not really that
And I'm going to butcher his name, and I apologize in advance. Raïs Mboumbouli called up for Algeria Mouali.
Yeah, he's
from Philadelphia.
He's their number one keeper.
He is.
That's really, you know, never mind.
Goes back to
no,
the
I just noticed well, that.
Really?
That's
impacting the Crew game. So
yeah, that is impacting.
I mean,
we should ask Jonathan Tenenwald about that.
We should.
And Michael Lode. He's also called up for Sierra Leone and Cameroon. So that's also happening. So those are things that are happening. We're going to come back in a few minutes here. Greg's going to yell at people for a while, and then we're going to talk Crew Rebrand. That's all coming up next. This is the Massive Report.
Sure, you will find many ways to rejoice, Hipster Crew fans. In just a couple of days, every single piece of team merchandise you own will be a throwback. That's right, hang up your hard hats because it's the final pre-rebrand edition of Cards Against Insanity. Opinions are mine and not those of the Massive Report or the Columbus Crew, and I promised myself I wouldn't reference anything that happened during Saturday night's game, even though I could give out cards all night to the officials, the crew defense, and whoever's responsible for Kevin Alston's hair. But you guys were watching that anyway. Here's what you might have missed, but I didn't. Yellow card to U.S. Soccer, who today confirmed the goalkeeper Hope Solo will be included in the women's national squad for their upcoming World Cup qualifiers. Solo is set to appear in court on November 4th on charges that she beat her sister and teenage nephew in June. U.S. Soccer and Solo's club, the Seattle Reign, R-E-I-G-N, in case you missed that, have repeatedly stood by their decision not to suspend or even bench Solo, putting them slightly below the NFL in the "you're an important athlete, so we'll ignore this as best as we can" power rankings. And while I'm on the subject, max respect to former U.S. women's team goalkeeper Jillian Loyden, whose op-ed piece in USA Today also called out U.S. soccer for sitting on their hands when it came to Solo. But what would Jill Loyden know about domestic violence? Well, quite a lot, actually. Her sister was murdered 2 years ago, and the fiancé is awaiting trial. I said it a few weeks ago, and I'll say it again. The NFL can withstand a PR crisis and still be relevant in this country. Soccer, not so much. Drop Solo before you become a laughingstock. Yellow card to Keith Olbermann. Some people love him, some people hate him. I tend to agree with him on a lot of his points, and his Worst in the World segment not only partially inspired the format of Cards Against Insanity, but also led to Massive City releasing pretty much the best t-shirt of 2014. But his attempted Australian accent? We're going to play this whole thing for context. Sam, play the clip.
For sport. It's the morning show. Alan's the afternoon host. He's a golfer. Apparently, he does a segment on the morning show, often while driving. Experts will tell you that distracted driving, running your gob on the phone, is just about as dangerous as holding your phone or your sandwich or whatever, trying to drive at the same time. Mark Allen not only proved that, but he also proved that the through line of sports talk blabberdom. Hey, innocent bystanders could have been killed? That's great radio! That's universal. Watch out for your blind spot, Mark.
So he's put the four best swings. One, two, three, four. After that, you look at Phil Mickelson. I've just crashed, KB. The car.
Oh, jingos.
Jingos.
Not just the Mercedes. Well, we'll let you go, and we'll get back later. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. Everybody's okay. Ladies in front, okay.
Okay.
If Craig Howard's listening from Berwick Mercedes-Benz...
We need a tow truck.
Okay, Craig.
We need a tow truck. So this is live radio. This is the first time we've had a crash on live radio. Now, he was obviously... He was on hands-free.
I'm on hands-free.
Yeah.
I'm on hands-free.
Yeah. Surprised you hadn't pulled over, but look, you ran in the back of someone, have you?
Yeah, there's the lady. Yeah. All right,
okay,
KB, I've got to go.
Yeah, okay, well, don't say anything for legal reasons. That's what's coming through from Craig Howard at the moment. Don't say anything for legal reasons. Can you believe that? He's had a crash while speaking on radio. That is a first. That is an absolute first. I reckon that'd make a good promo, don't you think? That would make a very good promo.
It's hot enough in here to boil a monkey's bum. That's a strange expression, Bruce. Well, Bruce, I heard the Prime Minister use it. Hot enough in here to boil a monkey's bum, Your Majesty, he said, and she smiled quietly to herself. Notice that the co-host who had the accident actually got in a plug for the dealership that must have given him the car. I can't be sure I didn't run over a grandmother, Bruce, but if anybody's listening from Graham Lloyd Mercedes-Benz, Mark Allen and his colleagues on Hungry for Sport on Australian Sports Radio.
I've said this before, and I will say it again and again and again until I'm a nice shade of MSNBC blue in the face. There is only one group of people who can successfully pull off an Australian accent. Australians. Might be hot enough to boil a monkey's bum, but your accent sounds like it came out of one. Bugger off. Staying in my homeland. Back to normal. Staying in my homeland, yellow card to the fan of the South Sydney Rabbitohs. No, that's not an Easter-themed breakfast cereal. They're a rugby league team, and after their 30-6 win over the Canterbury Bulldogs on Sunday, are National Rugby League champions for the first time since 1971. Naturally, there was a huge party on the streets of Sydney, and local TV station Channel 9 reported live on the scene, and one fan was so excited that he decided the best way to celebrate was to drop his pants and wave his junk around in front of the camera on live national TV. For the record, the team is partly owned by Russell Crowe, who starred in Gladiator, making me wonder if the guy who dropped Trout was just looking for a sword fight. Yellow card to the NFL, rapidly becoming the Stephen Lenhardt of Cards Against Insanity. Right now, they have a domestic violence epidemic among their players, a franchise with a racist name, half-empty stadiums, and a commissioner who's either a liar or simply incompetent. So what was at the top of their to-do list last week? Well, they issued a rule banning Beats by Dre headphones on the sidelines. Beats by Rice and Beats by Peterson are apparently cool, though. They'll look the other way for that. The ban comes as a result of the NFL's deal with Bose, which, like the Sony deal at the World Cup, means that only that manufacturer's products are allowed to be in front of a TV camera during games or televised interviews. In this case, I suppose it makes sense from an exposure standpoint, since the only people who can afford to wear Bose headphones are NFL players. And a second yellow card to the NFL. As if the headphones thing wasn't proof enough that their priorities are all out of whack, and I'm not making another Ray Rice or Adrian Peterson joke out of that one. The officials working last Monday night's game between the Chiefs and the Patriots penalized Chiefs player Hussein Abdullah for excessive celebration after he kneeled in Muslim prayer in the end zone after scoring a touchdown. An NFL rule defines kneeling as an excessive celebration worthy of a 15-yard penalty, but players like Brandon Marshall, Greg Jennings, and most famously Tim Tebow have been known for kneeling in Christian prayer and not being penalized for it. 40% of people listening to this don't see the problem here. Yellow card to Manuel de Souza, the Portuguese referee working Thursday's Europa League match between Feyenoord and Standard Liège, apparently completely forgot the rules of the game when he allowed a Feyenoord goal to stand after it was scored directly from a throw-in. You can't do that, by the way. It doesn't count, except maybe in FIFA 15. Replays show the ball being thrown in, clearing the heads of eight different players in the box, taking a bounce and beating Standard goalkeeper Eiji Kawashima. UEFA claimed that Feyenoord's Sven van Beek got a touch on it and credited him with the goal, and guess what? It was the difference in the game as Feyenoord won 2-1, meaning they were up to Standard, but the refereeing, not so much. Yellow card to A-League club Western Sydney Wanderers. Their men's team face Al Hilal of Saudi Arabia in the upcoming AFC Champions League final, but their women's team, they need a little work. Much to the delight of friend of the show Chris Edwards, they lost 10-1 at home to Perth Glory over the weekend, an Australian club record. One player, Kate Gill, scored 5. To put this in perspective, Western Sydney are to my club, Sydney FC, what Tottenham are to Arsenal, or Real to Atletico Madrid, or the Seattle Sounders to just about anybody. So I took great pleasure in this result, but I can't give the homeless, sorry, Wanderers, too much of a hard time. They are a relatively new club. Perth have a much stronger women's team, and it's really hard to play soccer in sweatpants and Ugg boots with a cigarette hanging out of your mouth, and that tells you all about Western Sydney women that you need to know. And finally, red card to the Village People, a.k.a. the brand identity we've come to associate with the Columbus Crew since their inception in 1996, or year zero to some fans. And the red card is not because there was anything necessarily bad about it, but it just seems like the right way to send it off. Believe it or not, I began following MLS in its inaugural year, a full 7 years before I set foot on U.S. soil for the first time. I wouldn't call myself a fan of the team at the time, but thanks to family connections to Ohio, if you asked me who I rooted for, I'd have probably laughed, because that word means something very different in Australia. But with the exception of New England and maybe DC United, whose change was slight, this time next week, every remaining MLS charter franchise will have abandoned their initial look as the league gains more worldwide exposure and attempts to be taken more seriously at home and abroad. Names like the Burn, the Clash, and the Wiz have all gone by the wayside. So have some of the gaudy color schemes. So have the wacky rules MLS had in its early days that I've mentioned a few times before, like the Shootout. MLS began in the 90s, and most of the identities looked like it. Rebrands for virtually all the original teams were inevitable, whether it was sponsor-driven like the Red Bulls, a more sensible name change like FC Dallas, or just a better logo and color scheme like the Galaxy or the Rapids. For the Crew, it was about time they joined the party. A lot of people claiming to be attached to the old logo and identity, let me correct you. You're attached to the club, and this just happens to be the only thing you've ever visually associated with it. Changing the logo, the business name, or even the color scheme, the latter of which isn't happening anyway, doesn't take anything away from what we love about the Columbus Crew or what gets us standing up and cheering at Crew Stadium, in our living room, or whatever bar we happen to be at. Hendox, by the way, $2 draft specials on Monday nights. It doesn't take away the 2002 Open Cup. It doesn't take away the 2008 MLS Cup. It doesn't take away this season, which has been above and beyond our early expectations, playoffs or no. I say all of this having not yet seen the new logo. But if we've learned anything about Anthony Precourt and co, it's that these guys take this team and this city pretty seriously. We couldn't always say that about much of MLS 1.0. We certainly couldn't say it about a brand that didn't reference the city we're in or the sport the team plays. I don't hate the current logo, but I'm glad to see that we're moving ahead. I will forever associate the Village People with some of the most fun times I've had in my life, and I'll be keeping all the merchandise I own, mostly because it gets valuable after that point. But for an improving team in a growing city, in a growing league, evolution is necessary for survival. Don't be afraid of it. Before I finish, I'd like to dedicate tonight's segment to a lifelong friend of mine from back home, a guy named John Bevan. He was the biggest South Sydney Rabbitohs fan you will ever meet, and he passed away last year before he could see his team win one more title. Here's to you, John, and to fans of teams all over the world whose passion is unmatched through good years and bad, even until literally their last breath. My name is Greg Benson. You can find me on Twitter as Gregulator614. Facebook is That One Guy Greg. And if you're at Hendox Pub, you're in my seat. Play on, but remember, I'm watching you.
So that seems to be a great way to segue into our conversation here in the third segment. Thank you,
like
Greg, for that.
That
yeah,
no
it's
problem.
Almost it's weird.
No
it's weird. Every once in a while, Sam does something that makes us go, "What? What? We're supposed to talk about this now?" Okay, cool. So I keep looking over at Justin because I've heard Justin has some sort of card to give out against someone.
No, I don't.
No, you don't.
I rescind that card.
You rescind the card. Okay, that's fair. All right, well, let's talk about this. Crew rebrand, that's happening Wednesday. It's a thing. What do you guys think? What's going to happen? It's interesting to me because it's the first time that you see, especially, you know, an Anthony Precourt-based team do anything that's viral, kind of grassroots, that sort of stuff. But at the same time... you know, you have this circle, I guess, you know, for kids. You've got that going on. So, Morgan, I'm going to go to you right off the bat. What do you think is going to happen?
Hi, Mac Ashert.
Hi, Morgan Hughes. How
good
are you?
Good to see you again.
It's great to see you.
It's nice to be back on the radio.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
No, that's as far ahead as you got, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Where are we? No, I've said from the very beginning when MLS was releasing their redone logo and, you know, for the last couple of years when it's been clear that the Crew were going to redo their logo, the Crew literally could have, like, a square that is just black and maybe says Crew on it. Maybe.
Maybe.
And it would not matter to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go Crew.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to change anything about the way I feel about this team. Other than, I might miss this logo a little bit. But only a little bit.
Yeah.
Because change is good.
Mm-hmm. I'm not, like, that's the whole thing. I'm not upset about the logo going away. This happens every single time. There's not a single, if you look at sports that have been around for forever, you know, teams have been around forever. The Chicago Cubs don't have the same logo they had in 1908 when they won their last World Series. Sorry to my girlfriend who just got upset about me saying that.
I'll kill you, Matt.
But you know, you don't. The same thing goes for, you know, any of those teams. I mean, you know, teams that have even been, you know, been in their home city for. But the Green Bay Packers have updated their logo. Mm-hmm. You know, the New York Yankees. Any of those teams have done something to it to make it a little different.
Here's the thing about soccer fans in America. We are, as people, as sports fans, we are always trying to prove how much we like something with our soccer teams. Mm-hmm. It's like our disease as a, you know, as a country, as soccer fans. Like, well, oh, I was at Ohio Stadium. I saw the Crew play at the Horseshoe. Like,
yeah.
And what? Congrats? What do you, I mean... But do you think I'm going to give you a prize? Because I'm not that guy. Like, I'm not in charge of the horseshoe prizes for Crew soccer ticket stubs. Like, I think that's Sam.
Yeah, Sam's in charge.
For sure.
Of
the, you know, but I think that...
It's Sam's job.
One, like, for instance, in the U.S. Open Cup this year, we played the Indy 11.
Yeah.
And it was... Literally, when we played the Indianapolis 11, or whatever the hell they're called, they had never won a game before. They had just become a thing, and they'd never won a game ever. Mm-hmm. And I got to Akron, and we were walking in the front door, the front gate, and I had a crap load of flags with me, and they were giving some indie supporters crap about bringing flags in, and I'm like, hey, is that guy trying to tell you can't bring, because you can bring flags in, and this guy yelled at his friend that was standing next to me. He goes, get that guy, I'll kill you. Like, he was threatening to murder me. I'm like...
Because those people are idiots.
Yeah, like, yeah. I don't care how long you've been a fan of anything, but this is what this guy is doing, and this is what everyone is doing by going, there's no, you cannot change, it's a thing, like, I was here at this time, and I saw it when it became a thing, and blah, blah, blah. Dude, who cares? Things change.
Yep.
You're still, you could have started watching The Crew, or God forbid, the Sounders, or The Fire, or something, last season, and you would still be, I mean, if you relevant, as relevant as a fan as anybody else, who cares? Things change. We put a stage in the middle of Crew Stadium, and it was a good thing.
Yeah, it made things better.
Yeah, we're changing really things. It happens. Get over it. Go
and
Crew.
It's not as if this has so much. This is not a 100-year-long logo. This is not like Manchester United or Real Madrid or someone like that changing their logo.
Or soccer club.
Marie's here.
If you were born in the same year, if you were born in the same year as the Columbus Crew, you can't legally drink in this country. Just to put that in perspective, that's not much history.
You're not allowed to have an opinion, and those are my rules. That's the thing that I say.
I feel like if you're not at Pendox right now, you're not allowed to have an opinion.
Technically true.
Well, whenever you're listening to this, you might be.
I feel like my right arm right now is the most blessed right arm ever. But thank you, Marie. Anyway, but you look at a lot of those teams, especially the English teams and things along those lines. You know, yeah, there's been tweaks. It's not been a full-on rebrand or anything along those lines, but most of those, graphic design ability was not what it was in 1890 whatever as it is right now.
Well, wait a second.
Oh, Justin Bell.
Let's roll this back a little bit.
We're going to play Justin's theme song.
So, when we talk about where
Justin's opinions suck.
Well, we go back to the original, the old teams in England. There's a lot of history behind the way that they came up with it. England and Europe and Germany,
there is,
everywhere.
There's a lot of
really cool stories about why those things happen the way that they have. And
are there?
Yes, there are.
Oh, okay.
For instance, I will engage you with the history of Inter Milan's crest.
Oh, just to pick one random team.
Yeah, just one random one.
It's
the reason why they have their crest and their colors the way
that
the reason why they have their colors and their crest the way that they are is because they split off from
Justin
Milan.
Looks super good in purple.
Milan was the huge club in Northern Italy. And a bunch of guys said, you know what, we don't like the way that you run your thing because you don't like foreigners on your team. So we're going to have a team full of foreigners. We're going to welcome anybody from any place. And they couldn't come up with a name for their team or the way that their team looked. So they were all sitting outside smoking cigarettes late into the night, staring up into the sky. And they all noticed that this unusual color of blue and black.
What we'll do is
we'll have our colors be blue and black, and we'll have a star on it. And so to this day, Inter Milan still has those colors.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they had a bunch of artists and people who were not from Italy basically come up with their logo.
Yeah.
And so teams actually have legends and histories and things like that come up.
Yeah.
Now, let's go back. Let's go to where we come from. Where we come from is not that.
Yeah.
We did the organizations that started the MLS, the Columbus Crew, they were not hurting for money. They were not looking around for a club to belong to. They were not ostracized from some larger club. They were a bunch of businessmen.
Yep.
And they came up with the quickest way that they could to basically throw together a team, a league in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And what we got was what we got.
Yeah.
Now, over the course of the last 20 years, there's been a lot of support for that logo.
Yeah.
And now we're on the precipice of that changing.
Yeah.
The question now becomes, what are we going to think about this new logo?
And my answer is always going to be, who cares? Go Crew.
That's fine. That's fine.
And I know that everybody has different opinions, right? That's fine.
The supporting the team, I don't think is in question for 98% of the people listening to the show and 100% of the people talking on this show right now. It's do we like it or not? Which is certainly a aesthetic question that you can have. We don't know. It's going to be a circle. We're pretty well aware of that at this point. Mm-hmm. What I do like, and I want to touch on this for just a second before we go back into kind of our thoughts on what it's going to be, is they have done, which you never saw with the Hunts, a pretty decent kind of street marketing campaign on this new logo. Mm-hmm. Which I kind of want to talk about that for a half a second here, because I think that's kind of, it's unique, especially considering the old ownership group that we had that wouldn't have even passed into their mindset. But Greg, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the difference is the fact that Precourt is post social media era.
Yeah.
And is more in tune with that, as it's less of a what the hell is this that the Hunts would have approached this kind of thing from.
Well, I'm not talking about Lamar.
I'm not talking about Lamar.
There's a giant difference between HSG and Lamar Hunt, because
sure.
I think that you know, Lamar Hunt was always kind of a front runner and was always, I mean, obviously look at the stadium. You look at that sort of
stuff. Pioneer, you mean, not a
the pioneer. That's yeah. what I mean. Yes. I meant
yeah.
to say.
Yeah, I know.
HSG, they were just maintaining.
Yeah, well,
and
HSG,
that was fair for the position that they were in my opinion. But
HSG did a perfectly fine job of holding over from when Lamar passed away to our new group. I don't think that they maintained the club. I don't think they necessarily. A lot of people grew it, but at the same time, yes, your characterization of that was much better than what I said,
no,
Justin. But it's interesting to me to see kind of this sort of stuff embraced. What do you think, Justin?
I'm of two minds of it. I think that they've done a really good job there of being thoughtful to try to create something that's going to be well received.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I totally see the business of coming up with a plan.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to create something that is going to be embraced by our corporate sponsors, potential corporate sponsors?
Yeah.
Look, there is no way that Nationwide is going to put the current Columbus Crew logo on anything that they ever make.
Yeah.
Or mm-hmm. their logo, on their advertisements, on anything that they do. So they're not going to sponsor. I mean, it's just corporations want something that's clean, that's not controversial, that is not explainable. You don't have to take a lot of time to explain it. And so I have a real strong feeling that that's a big influence in how this is going to go down.
If Anthony Precourt's listening to this before Wednesday, sack the dogfighting logo that you had, because apparently Nationwide
yeah,
doesn't want to see that. Dogfighting's not cool.
Whoa.
But like
is that true?
No, it's false. I made that up.
Dogfighting
is
only
a lie.
Dogfighting is only cool when Snoopy and the Red Baron are involved.
I only buy
true,
from companies
true.
Oh, dogfighting.
That have
dogfighting
aeroplanes
in their logo.
Aeroplanes.
But no, I think
Papa John's.
Yeah, Papa John's.
And that's a legitimate reason of for why you design something the way that you do.
Yeah, of course.
As a professional soccer team in the United States in 2014.
Yeah.
You're not thinking only about, boy, I want to make sure that my fans feel something in their heart mm-hmm. about they're going to support this team because it speaks to this club mentality that is in Columbus. That's not the only influence. There's a lot of influences, and I think that the people who have created this logo have taken all of these influences into consideration.
Yeah.
I think they've done a very good job of being thoughtful.
Yeah.
And that's basically all that we can ask as fans, is be thoughtful, create something that you think is good. What I really hope they do not do, and I've mentioned this to the people who I think are in charge of this, is don't try to oversell it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the one thing that MLS did when they launched their new logo is they oversold it.
Yeah.
Oh,
they
God,
explained
yeah.
the crap out of
spent
every single aspect of it.
Spent too much time telling us why, like,
why
as
you
if
should
they
like
knew
it.
We were going to question what
if
the hell
there is
were
a
you
diagram
thinking.
Of
just say that you like this. This is a good thing.
Yeah.
We like it. I hope that you guys like it. And eventually, you're all going to embrace it.
If anybody from the crew tries to literally describe to me why there's an outline on a shape, I'm just going to just be a Sounders fan.
Yeah, I really hope that they don't do
no,
that.
No, you're not.
I have
the
a feeling that they're
the
probably
going
to
be an impact.
The circle gets the square.
You're going to be an impact fan.
Thank you,
anyway,
Jim J. Bullock.
You can go here.
No, yeah. But that's the thing. This cannot go down like the MLS logo reveal went down. There's no
way.
It
can't, no.
Because nobody is emotionally tied to Major League Soccer outside of the 18 white old people that own Major League Soccer.
Yeah. You know, that's actually it. True.
It's,
I mean,
it's very true.
That's science.
To be fair, Anthony Precourt is not that old.
Okay.
That's why I said 18.
Middle-aged.
You said 18.
Sorry, Tony Aces. Don't have me offed. But...
We don't know who owns, like, what's Red Bull? It's like some robotic entity in Austria somewhere.
Really, no, it's the guy that jumped out of the spaceship.
I'm
glad that you brought them up. And if we have some time, we can talk about this. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I think that
we have all the time.
We'll do it on After Dark, and Sam will never air it. Because it's too good.
Oh,
my gosh.
That was just, anyway.
What he just did to me.
Go on,
This is really interesting where the Columbus Crew are, and it's another reason why I think we should just be like, this is okay. What we like is what we like. Let's not try to just drop this huge, bright, you know, we're not raising the ball in Times Square, right?
We're
creating a logo that we're all going to kind of support for the next few. So let's not, yeah, we hope. And because what's going to happen next year is Chivas USA is going away. And you can see the wheels spinning, the wheels turning. There's going to be a giant launch of LA2 coming up soon.
Chivas USA has been eliminated from MLS contention.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Next year, New York City is going to have their second team. It's going to be playing in Yankee Stadium. This is going to be huge. Orlando City.
They can fit it in now because Jeter left.
Yeah.
Kaká. Oh, nice.
That's good.
Very good.
Kaká is going to be playing for Orlando City. Yeah, Atlanta is coming after that. There's going to be this series of huge events.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually the Columbus Crew logo rebrand is going to be lost.
Yep.
So let's not
even
worry
Thursday
about this thing.
Is what you're talking
about. Yeah, pretty much.
Thursday.
So this is our time to kind of have this
Wednesday
thing.
At 6:08 p.m.
It's going to be
could be as soon as then.
Could be.
And that's okay.
New politics has to play first.
No,
does anybody
okay.
know that band? Am I the only
Are
one
you
who doesn't?
Kidding me?
I've never.
Okay, so
Shangirl in Harlem.
People do know that band.
I've played this song. That band is a pump.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
I have no idea who they are.
Morgan Hughes and I are looking at each other like,
I've never heard
this
of
is a world that we woke up in. All right.
If Mike Malo is listening to this podcast, then this means that we have to get Maria a pass to the event because she's the only person in Columbus, Ohio who knows.
And my birthday is Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who
knows who knew politics?
30th birthday.
Mike looked at me like I had seven heads when I said, I've never heard of it. What are they, the Gin Blossoms?
Are they
like,
actually
are they
there? Wednesday? I didn't even know this.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll get you in. Don't worry about it.
You have to get me in. I know like three different ways to climb over that fence.
Dude, I know we are. That's 100%.
People. It's all good. So anyway, so yeah.
Do we want to do a prediction of how we think this is going to go down?
Yeah, let's do that before we end this segment.
Is it a percentage thing? Well, how we run it?
I don't know. How do we want to do that?
Thumbs up, thumbs sideways, thumbs down. That's
for
what we're going to do.
Good,
for
the rebrand, good, bad, or
ugly? How do people perceive it? Is it thumbs up? Everybody's like, yeah, that's awesome. Thumbs sideways. Or thumbs down like, oh, that sucks.
In what arena are we talking? Twitter?
Social media.
Big soccer?
No, not big soccer. Nobody wants to talk to those people.
We never big soccer.
No, you don't go for big soccer.
One, Reddit is going to know, like, is going to explain why they know better than everybody else.
Yeah.
But they like it.
In our defense. That's very true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Big soccer's going to hate it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
If
everything's going to be bad.
If didn't hate it, I'd be worried.
Yeah. Big soccer might just break Netscape Navigator.
Because Big Soccer just found out that Firefox has
You really are
Windows.
Old, Mark.
They're all using Netscape Navigator going, oh, my God, ICQ isn't online. How do I be angry about something on Big Soccer tonight?
All right, so let's do this. We're going to start with Sam, actually. Thumbs up, thumbs sideways, thumbs down.
You know, it's kind of like you said earlier. It's not about the crest. It's about the club. So I'm going to say the reasonable fan will be thumbs up. I will also say that if this was even iffy, I don't see the Crew going that heavy.
No, behind I agree.
It.
They put a big banner up at Hendox Pub, I heard.
That's right.
Yeah.
And honestly, really, the bottom line, it's coming after the MLS rebrand. It can't suck that bad.
Right.
No, it can't.
MLS has set the bar very low.
Exactly.
That's a really good point that I did not think about.
Justin Bell.
I think it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
But I also think there's going to
be... Make him commit. Matt, you're the host of
commit.
This. Commit.
Justin.
Fine
is it going to be good?
Make him.
Are you going to be excited to wear it next year?
Sure.
Nope.
So wishy-washy.
That's, sentiment of excitement.
I think it's going to be fine.
From Justin Bell,
I think it's going to be fine.
Somebody needs to kill this guy.
It's going to be fine. I think there's going to be a lot of people who freak the hell out.
Of course.
But they'll get over it.
All right.
Tony will be fine.
It's going to be fine.
Morgan.
I will say on Big Soccer, 100% of humans will hate it. I'll say on Twitter.
The robots.
Nobody cares about
the robots.
Be
drinking gasoline. That's how science works. Twitter, 60% will love it. 40% of us in our 30s. And that's literally how it works. Reddit, 100% is liking it. And we're going to have a sellout for the last game of the year. And who cares? And we're going to make the playoffs and win the cup.
Right. I mean, honestly, I think a lot of the way that the team does for the rest of the year is going to impact the way that this is embraced for the rest of the year. Because if the team starts not playing very well, then people are going to be like, well, the freaking logo just sucks.
But
look, again, like
they
the people
play for the circle.
The thing that really encourages me is that the people who create, who have worked really hard on this, have worked really hard on this.
Yeah.
And they've been very thoughtful. That's the word I keep throwing out there, very thoughtful. Because I don't think that Sporting Kansas City was very thoughtful in what
it
they
wasn't.
Did.
It was the Eastern Conference logo jumbled
in. I don't think that San Jose was very thoughtful in what they did.
No, that was certainly not.
Well, I know that MLS told the crew to hey, bring other people in on this and make it more MLS-y and make it more generic and more exactly what everybody else has done. And they pretty much said, thank you for your input, but we're going to do a crew thing.
Right, that's a good thing.
And that's awesome. An amazing thing.
Seriously, Justin said it. This is all we can ask.
Yeah.
From a business that we root for as a sports team, all we can ask is that they are very thoughtful with how they go about it.
All right, I want to ask Marie, and then I'm going to go to Greg. Marie, what do you think is going to happen?
Oh, my God.
I love this already.
Today, Junior.
Yeah, today, Junior. Come on.
This is great radio, by the way.
Yeah,
I love
fantastic.
The crew.
Are you wearing Beats headphones?
No, I'm not. I'm wearing Sony headphones.
Okay. I was going to say.
They're approved by me.
Yeah, they're approved by Sam. You're good.
Thanks, Samuel.
What do you think?
I love the crew. I love whatever they're trying to do to increase the brand, the representation, the young crowd. I want them to do it all. They can't do it all. That's okay. Let's see what they have. Let's not judge before we know. Let's believe in our town, our city, our people. Let's make everything awesome all the in time.
Fair enough. Greg.
Justin brought up an excellent point. I'll touch on this very quickly. The timing of this. My concern is if the crew somehow capitulate and miss the playoffs, that the timing of the release of the rebrand will be blamed in some part for being a distraction.
And rightfully so.
Right. And
by three people on Big Soccer.
Sure.
Science shows that is the case.
At the same time, I don't think a logo is going to make or break whether or not the team makes the playoffs. But at the same time, with 3 weeks to go in a playoff chase, you wonder why they couldn't just put
this
back
to. They have to because the off-season story is going to be NYC2 in Orlando.
I see that. They have to do it right now.
We can do whatever we want whenever we want because we're going to win the playoffs and your face is a butt.
on the logo itself.
Yep.
Genius.
That's science, by the way.
On the logo itself, from what we've heard like little...
If you freeze the podcast earlier, you can actually hear Greg's heart breaking.
I've been called way worse.
Yeesh.
I've been called way worse by way better people.
That's my favorite insult.
It's going to get
that's
ugly.
My favorite insult.
No one with a better rack.
On the... That's debatable.
What's happened?
On the actual logo itself, we've been given little hints, little teasers of information about what kind of elements this thing might include. We've been told that yes, it's a circle, or yes, it'll incorporate the Columbus name, or the skyline, or something like that. Thinking about all the possibilities of how that could play out in my head, I can't see how this loses, really. But that's me. I'm an optimist. I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to see what they come up with.
All right, here's what I'm going to say before I put this thing to bed as my microphone gets turned back on. Here's what I'm going to say is I am super looking forward to Wednesday night's event. I am also really looking forward to our logo, which is going to be a circle with a White Castle slider with cheese. Matt, in the middle of it.
Matt, before you sign off, can you make a thing? Okay, I need to know, are we supposed to wear ties on Wednesday or no? I mean, no.
I'm
tell
wearing
the
a
masses.
Suit. I know that, but I'm not wearing a tie.
Yeah, the invitation I got was smart casual. Yeah.
That
yeah,
is not a thing. Is. Who said that? Who said that?
I'm going to I'm actually covering my suit with pig brains.
I'm going
to make it smart
fire
casual.
On their...
I mean, right. I kind of consider myself to be kind of smart casual.
No, you're not. At all right.
That's nice ego. All right, yeah. We're coming back in a few minutes.
You know.
Talk a little Philadelphia. That's coming up next. This is the Massive Report.
Cart Smashable.
Smart casual version.
Search the world for treasure. Learn science, technology. Where can you begin to make your dreams all come true? On the land or on the sea? Where can you learn to fly, play in sports or skin dive, study oceanography?
It is segment four of the Massive Report. Obviously, big series coming up. We've alluded to this in previous segments so far. The crew playing Philly twice in the last couple of weeks of the season here. And on the phone, we have Jonathan Tannewald of Philly.com. How's it going, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing real well, man, other than the results from last weekend for us. But kind of wanted to get your take as we start this. It seems weird. I don't know. Especially for us, we always seem to get one close Eastern Conference opponent home at home towards the end of the season. And this year, it's Philadelphia.
It can't be coincidental, Ken.
Yeah, it's got to be. There's got to be something to it. But I think we'll blame the. We have the big. Quarter Horse Congress that happens at our stadium every year, so we don't get to play any home games until the last week of October, so we have a weird away schedule every single year. But I guess I want to start out with that. Obviously, the crew in Philly fighting for vital points. Philadelphia right now in seventh place, the crew in fifth, but only 4 points separate the two teams. What are your thoughts on the end of the season?
Well, first of all, I do think that MLS does this a little bit intentionally,
mm-hmm.
where they try to put some of the big intra-conference games, and you know, national TV plays some major role in that. If you think about that Seattle LA back to back,
yeah,
that's coming up. That's going to be absolutely epic. You know, somewhere, probably somebody either at ESPN or Major League Soccer headquarters had a hand in making sure that would happen.
Yeah.
You know, and Toronto closes with Montreal, and I'm sure there are a couple others along the way that are sort of rivalries or games where they figured the teams might be close to each other in the standings. And if the two teams at the top are close to each other, then they probably got the two teams towards the bottom, you know, they think might be towards the bottom.
Yeah.
Paired off somewhere along the way. Look, it's dramatic. I don't think the Union are going to make it, but if they, I think they've got to win out.
Yeah.
But if they do, we've seen that this thing goes, you know, on a roller coaster every week, so who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, it seems to be, especially with the last couple of years, the East especially has kind of been that roller coaster where it's, you know, with there's a couple of teams that are the haves this year. Obviously, that's really just DC. You can definitely group after this weekend New England into that group as well. But you've got the have nots, which are, you know, Houston, Chicago, and Montreal, which. Houston maybe has an outsider's chance if the stars align. But then you have this kind of middle group, Sporting, New York, Columbus, Toronto, and Philly, that are all bunched up in the middle of the table.
It's amazing to me that Sporting Kansas City is all of a sudden in the middle of this muck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They have no business being there, but they are there beyond merit.
Yeah, you guys,
they should not be in this.
Yeah.
They and DC United should have pulled away from the pack, and it is incredible to me that Sporting Kansas City has not pulled away from the pack, and if they don't get things right real fast, they may miss the playoffs.
Kind of reminds you of Montreal last year, you know? I think Montreal was dominating the East for most of the year, and then they just kind of completely fell apart.
Minus the volcanic eruptions.
Yeah. There's that. So you play Kansas City. Philly plays Kansas City in between the Crew games. That's the sandwich to the Crew's bun. So, do you guys feel strong about your chances in that game?
Well, let me apologize to your listenership on one small part, which is to put me in the second person is not quite accurate. As your listeners who follow me on Twitter know, I keep a pretty fair distance from the Union and skewer them probably these days more often than I praise them, for better or worse.
Fair enough.
So, look, I think that. All that can be on their minds right now is winning out, and I don't think they will.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's losing the last game in Columbus, because one of those two teams is not going to make it, and Columbus may have to win that game to fend Toronto off.
Right.
Kansas City is a better team than Philadelphia, and I think the real sign of just how much trouble the Union are in, the fact that Connor Casey is battling tendonitis in his knee. That is an injury that comes from being played too much.
Mm.
And he's the only quality striker they have got. For a lot of reasons, they have not developed any capable backups out of their academy, and instead of signing a capable backup or perhaps even a starting quality guy who could sort of ease Casey through the rest of the year, they went out and signed a goalkeeper they didn't need, and whoops, what did he do last Thursday?
Exactly.
Nearly cost them their entire shopping
players. Does that seem very evident by what happened in the Chicago game, where you couldn't really get anything going and you couldn't, you know, Philadelphia couldn't really finish, and then you have a silly mistake like what took place in the end for really a heartbreaker?
So is this some kind of maybe a hangover from the Open Cup loss? I mean, that was a pretty epic game. There was Philly's first shot at silverware. How the fans taking this, and how do you think this has affected the team?
I think maybe there was a game and a half worth of hang.
Yeah.
But not the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Not all of us, by any means. And sort of get back to what we were talking about Rice and Bowling. This is a guy who Nick Sakevich, the CEO of the Union, went out and signed as a glamour signing.
Yeah.
They did not need. And it blew up the team chemistry. And I'm not the world's biggest fan of Zach McMath as much as other people are. But they did not need to sign another goalkeeper. They needed to sign a striker. And this was as you know, Ivis Morris of Goal.com wrote it in his column. And I don't think it was breaking news to anybody who has ever dealt with Nick Sakevich in all of his years, going back to the very first year of Major League Soccer, that this was his baby, signing Rice and Bull. And it blew up in his face, as a fair number of other moves that he has made in his career, to be fair, have.
Yeah.
You guys have been probably, I presume, following this league long enough to remember when he was running the Metro Stars.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And running them into the ground.
Yes.
Well, The attendance is declining at PPL Park. They have not made much traction in local media. They have not created really a niche in the Philadelphia sports landscape in the way that they would like to, or that people who would watch them on national TV and see the stadium would think that they would have. And it cannot be coincidence that Nick Sakevich has 18 years of MLS club management in his career and has won zero trophies.
That's true, man.
A lot of years of that.
So, trophies. You know, I don't see that I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah, one of the first time that we really heard any major news out of Philly this year was when they traded Jack McInerney to Montreal for Andrew Wenger. Just looking at their stats since then, both players have kind of. I mean, this was early days, 4 weeks into the season. Both players are around the 5-goal mark in the 20-something games since then. You know, Jack's 22 years old. There's guys that are talking about him possibly being a look in for the World Cup squad in 4 years' time.
Nope.
Does this? Okay.
Okay. I mean,
I'm going on what I hear. I wasn't one of them.
But needed to grow up. He's a good player. He's a good young player. He's got a big ego. And when you're 19, 20, 21 years old, you don't get to dictate the coach's tactics. And if the guy wants you to play alone up front, learn how to do it, you got to do it. Mm-hmm. You don't get to come out and say publicly, I play better in 4-4-2, mm-hmm. which is what he did. And if you're going to force a kid to grow up, what better way to do that than to put him into the biggest class, you know, take within the Eastern Conference at least, if not around Major League Soccer all the way, is there a bigger culture clash than going from a Philadelphia or a Columbus or a place of that scale to Montreal? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They sent him to a place where he would either have to grow up or sink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to his credit, he has grown up some. When Nick DeSantis stood up there and said he's got this contract year and we're going to exercise it, I think a few of us down here laughed a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of money in that contract next year. And he's no Marco Devine. He's played well. But I had relatively few objections to that trade because he needed to grow up and he wasn't going to do it here.
Do you think the Union are better off for having gotten rid of him?
I think they're better off for a lot of other reasons.
Yeah.
Okay.
So how do you?
I think they're better off because Christian Maidana is playing in the middle, and they've got a guy in Connor Casey who, when he is healthy, knows how to play that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and
true.
He got Sebastian Letou and Andrew Wenger running off of Casey. If you're going to have a guy like Casey who's up there, then the guys who are running to the left and the right have to shoot the ball. And Letou and Wenger will shoot the ball, not as much as they could or should, and not always from the best positions, but they'll do it.
So how do you think that Philadelphia is doing in MLS? This is year five.
Not well. Not nearly enough.
Now, what do you mean by that? Like they're not. I mean, winning is one metric, I suppose.
And let me say this. In Philadelphia, winning is the only metric.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in terms of the fan base, you mean, right?
In terms of fan base, media exposure, money, television, all of it.
It does not
matter if you have got Clint Dempsey. It does not matter if you have got a bunch of guys from your high school that you're spending more money on than your senior team. If you're winning, people will pay attention. They will make stars out of you. They made a star out of Jack McInerney.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jack McInerney has not earned any kind of star status overall, but they made him into one. And they've made Vincent Noguera into one, and they made Obi Okugo into one. Mm-hmm. And when they win, all that matters in this town is winning.
Well, one thing that's really interesting, though, is that over the last couple of weeks, I've noticed a lot of talk about the Philadelphia Union Academy. Not only
that's
on
nice.
Yeah, not only on the like MLS podcast, MLS out the sources in between on half times of games on MLS Live. It's shows about the Philadelphia or little bits
you about
the Philadelphia
talking
Academy.
About?
Yeah, so I'm like, at what point does this experiment, this single entity experiment, sort of lose its steam?
That's not why they're talking about it.
So why
they're talking about it because they're throwing all this money at it and it's not producing anything.
Hmm.
And everybody knows it.
Well, okay, so 5 years in, is that a fair measurement for?
They haven't brought up a home. They've got three homegrown players. They were all called up in the first year and a half. Peter Novak signed all the homegrown players.
Hmm.
I guess, you know, 2.5 years, whatever. Peter Novak signed all the homegrown players.
That's an interesting.
John Hackworth, and John Hackworth didn't play with. He didn't play Zach Pfeffer until the very end of his tenure. And Jim Curtin hasn't played him either, which I will give him that the starting 11 are better than the homegrown guys, but he's getting into a position now where he needs to try something a little different, and I'd like it if he gave some of these guys a run just to see if they're. It's because they've got some pace, some of these guys. Whether that might at least, you know, throw defenses for a loop.
So there's that tension, though, then, between developing players that can play for the first team and then wanting your fan base to come and support a winner. And
there's a third, but there's another track, and it's the one that I fear the Union are on, and I've said this before, Pete. My fear is that they are developing players for profit. They are not developing players to win with them.
They're a selling team.
And where the dynamic has changed in Major League Soccer in the last 5 years or so, with teams like Kansas City and with coaches like Greg Berhalter and with any number of others around the league, and even in Canada, in Toronto and Vancouver and Montreal, you're developing these guys to win in Major League Soccer. That is an end in and of itself now in a way that it never has been before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so the union are thinking like to use the cliche that I hate using because I think that we are in MLS 19.0 instead of MLS 3.0. You know, they are an MLS 1.0 team operating in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Suburban stadium, decent television deal, but not great. Very little exposure in the market. Developing young guys for profit, not to win with them. And then blowing it when a guy, unfortunately, my fear is that Obi Okugo, whose contract expires at the end of the season, he's going to walk for nothing, either for a very little trade value in Major League Soccer or go to Europe on a free transfer. And a guy who they should be getting a seven-figure transfer fee for, they will get nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. So back to, obviously, you know, we're talking about the the playoff race here. Your thoughts are in you know, with Philadelphia definitely on the outside looking in. What do you see with these two matches with Columbus? What does Philadelphia need to do to win?
They need everybody healthy.
Yeah,
and they need to just not give a damn what I think or what anybody else thinks. Just go out and play the game that they know they are capable of playing. Stop being afraid and win.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. They can win. Look, everybody complains when they win 1-0, and they want them to win 4-3. And for as much as I sometimes take issue with Jim Curtin's defensiveness,
mm-hmm.
It is fair to say that you have to probably. I do think you have to be able to win 1-0 before you can win 4-3.
That makes sense.
I had a question: Is Latu going to be able to play this weekend?
I think so.
Yeah.
He's certainly going to convince. He's going to believe in his own mind.
Mm-hmm. Bring some magic spray and just go for it. Okay.
What do you think? And kind of final question as we wind down here because we got to go to break here in just a bit and get ourselves up. We've been here for a while now. What do you think as far as the Columbus side of this? If you're looking at Columbus, what does Columbus need to do in order to secure 3 and/or 6 points from the Union?
Three is easy because I think they'll win the last
Six, I think they would have to overturn Federico Higuain's suspension.
That's fair. That is definitely a fair comment.
Oh, right. He's suspended.
Yeah, he is. He is definitely suspended for the next match.
We had blocked that out of our minds.
We were trying to block it out of our minds. Thanks for bringing it back to us.
I think they can get a draw on Saturday.
Yeah.
But in terms of six, I think you'd have to be on four.
That's fair. That's a fair comment. Well, Jonathan Tannenwald, Philly.com, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, man.
Can I say one other thing real quick?
Of course, yes.
Contrary to what some of your listeners might believe, I don't hate Columbus.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
What's the hate?
There's like a butt coming. I'm just
Yeah, we're waiting for the other shoe to drop. Yeah. Is the other shoe going to drop?
If the connection goes out again, then that means the shoe landed on the wire.
All right.
Well, Jeff. If you're in Columbus, your beers are on us.
Yeah, dude, definitely. If you happen to make it up for the final game of the season, let us know, and we'll have a couple beers for you. And
I will not be at the final game of the season because the U.S. women are here that weekend for World Cup qualifiers.
Makes sense.
But I would love to get out there for a U.S. national team game someday if they can fit me into the, if they can
one more
spare
question.
Another seat in the press box one of these years. I don't know.
One more question: are you going to Hartford?
No.
Okay.
I work my job until 3:30 on Fridays, and I just I'm not that stadium. As nice as it is, that stadium is a real hassle to get to, and get into, and get out of.
Makes sense.
Is there a place on the East Coast that's not a hassle?
Sure, Lincoln Financial Field's a breeze. It's right on the subway.
Yeah,
RFK's a breeze. Red Bull Arena is very easy.
Yeah, Red Bull is.
It is, yeah. No, Red Bull, I definitely, and RFK for that matter, but then again, I didn't drive there, so.
Well, but that's the point.
Yeah, yeah.
And next year, you know, there's not going to be an easier stadium in all of Major League Soccer next year to get to outside of maybe Portland and Vancouver than Yankee Stadium.
True enough.
That's true. That's true. All right, well, Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure.
Jonathan Tannenwald of Philly.com. Make sure you check out all of his stuff about the Philadelphia Union. Thanks for coming on the show, and we will talk to you later. Just talking about score predictions here real quick after that. We're going to go roundtable super quick because we went super over tonight. Justin, score prediction, Crew versus Philly.
1-1.
Morgan.
Wait, don't you always say like 6-0 Crew?
No. That's Matt.
That's Matt.
Yeah, that's me. Right. That's yeah. Totally Matt.
No, I've never listened to this show in my life.
Me either. That's the weird part.
Yeah.
Handsome guys don't have to listen.
Columbus Crew.
Well, hello, Marie.
Soccer Club, SC. 3 goals. Philadelphia, Chester, Pennsylvania. Sons of Benz. 1 goals. 1 soccer goals.
All right, Marie.
This Saturday night, I'm going to experience my first ever Crew away game. I just hope it's gentle.
Sam.
That sounded like victory.
Victory.
I got nothing.
You got nothing. All right,
nothing
Greg.
Nothing to add to that. 2-0 to the good guys for me.
All right, Julia. What? You wanted to be on the show. Get over here and tell me your prediction for Saturday.
Saturday?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a game.
There's a game? What is this nonsense you speak of?
Yeah.
You act like it's a season or something.
Just say pain.
Pain?
Yeah.
Pain.
Fair enough. Because apparently Morgan says that's what I do, 57-0 Crew.
There it is.
That's the thing. So this has been another edition of the Massive Report. Oh, look, the music showed up again.
He's trying to get you off the
No mic. Matter what happens this weekend, there will be one hooligan. That takes a naked selfie in front of the Liberty Bell.
That's fair enough. For Justin Bell, Nate Beckman, who was here earlier, Greg Benson, Julia Esch, Marie Wrights, Sam Fahmy, Morgan Hughes, my name is Matt Goshard. This has been the Massive Report. Look at that door, dude. You see that door right there? The one marked pirate? You think a pirate lives there?